leadership in cybersecurity isn't just about understanding threats. It's about leading a team to navigate them with confidence. At CPF Coaching LLC, we specialize in taking your leadership skills to the next level. With over 15 years in the cybersecurity field, we empower professionals and startups to reach unprecedented heights. Imagine having a personalized coaching experience tailored to your unique career ambitions. From strategic planning to masterful pitch and interview preparations, we're here to guide you through every challenge. Join us for our unique value proposition workshops or dive into our vibrant learning community for continuous skill advancement. Don't just be a part of the industry, redefine it.
Visit cpfcoaching.com for more information. Discover the leader within. Contact CPF Coaching LLC today and schedule your strategic session.
Hey, security peeps, we are live with another edition of Breaking Into Cybersecurity, and we have a hot, hot topic for today. First and foremost, I am Renee Small, cybersecurity super recruiter and talent management person expert, helping awesome leaders hire great talent. I'm here with Nick Pitts. Hey, Nick, say hi to everybody.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon. So our topic, well, we'll start off as usual, learning more about Nick, his career, how he got to where he is today. And then we will jump right into our hot topic, which is this the best time to break into cybersecurity? So Nick, I'm going to kick it off by asking, how did you get into security? How did you get to where you are today? Let us know.
Sure. Thanks, Renee. You know, what's always kind of struck me as interesting is especially folks that have kind of grown up in cybersecurity over the last, call it 30 years, everyone's kind of got a little bit of a different path. And as I kind of look back and reflect on what my path was, I was fortunate to find cyber just as it started to kind of become a formal thing across enterprises. I've been in the kind of in the cyber realm for coming on 25 years now. I started my career off at Union Pacific Railroad and kind of on the enterprise side, actually kind of on the audit side of things. And then made my way over to consulting. The jump from kind of internal audit to consulting was interesting because I kept finding myself kind of in these conversations where I felt like I had a fair amount of, you know, cybersecurity skills and experience. They were just being applied a little bit differently. But that auditor title was like, you're not a cybersecurity person. You're an auditor. And, you know, what do you know? And so that really started to, was kind of a chip on my shoulder more than anything and started to, fuel, my desire to kind of, you know, jump from one realm into the other, into that consulting realm. But I've had an opportunity to see cyber from, really a lot of different kind of angles over my career. And I can talk a little bit, about those. But from, you know, the audit side to the consulting side to a stint that I had on the cyber technology side of things, it's been fun growing up with cyber throughout my career and trying to just kind of keep up with the trajectory that cybersecurity as, you know, as a career path, as an enterprise discipline, however you want to describe it. Has really kind of taken off. You know, one of the things that I get asked a lot is, you know, kind of why cyber? And you know, you kind of hinted at this, like, how did you kind of build your career, you know, throughout, especially when for me, I was stepping into a career that was kind of still developing. You know, it's not like stepping into something that had been established for decades prior. We're all kind of finding our way through and down this path as cyber was growing up and continues to grow up. And one of the terms that really kind of hits for me is this is not that uncommon of a term, but it still resonates with me, is that of curiosity. And as I kind of track my, you know, my career, if you will, there are a few kind of seminal moments of curiosity, as I would describe it, that I felt, you know, were milestones for me in my journey into and through cybersecurity. And if I think back, you know, to high school, I'll date myself a little bit here, but I was a senior in high school the first time I got on the internet. And I remember just like, what is this? That's all I kept. What is this? How does this work? And it was literally that question that led me to, oh, I want to go figure this stuff out. Let's go into computer science. Let's go into management and information systems. And that's literally how I picked my major. I would say for you know, kids in high school that are looking to go, you know, into college, maybe a little bit more thought and thesis around choosing your major than that. But it was that curiosity. I wanted to learn about this because it was very new to me. And then I remember, so I'm about a sophomore in college at this point, and two things kind of happened at the same time. One, and this is kind of a funny part of the story. I remember talking to some of my professors, instructors at the time, and I'm like, okay, I'm getting this degree in comp sci and MIS. What can I do with this? And it basically came down to, well, you can go be a developer or you can go be a DBA. And absolutely zero disrespect to any of those career lines, but that was not something that was for me. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what have I done? what have I gotten myself into here? And around the same time, we had someone come into our class. For those that recall, there were a series of denial of service attacks on some pretty major internet properties, CNN, Yahoo, sites like that, back in, I think it was the year 2000. And we had someone come into one of my classrooms to talk about this. And I remember sitting back, again, curiosity. Wow, what is this? This sounds really, really interesting. I don't know what it is, but I want to learn more. And went up to the person after class and said, hey, do you do internships? No. Would you consider doing an internship? Well, let me go ask. And that's what got my launch into cybersecurity really initially, was just kind of asking for an opportunity. And so fast forward a few years, I mentioned kind of that auditor title that I had. And feeling like I wasn't necessarily being taken seriously as someone who was, you know, excited about cybersecurity and trying to help organizations, you know, improve and reduce risk. But under that auditor title, I felt like there were some limitations that I always heard, even back in my internships, like about consulting. And so this is, again, kind of early 2000s, and, you know, consulting, at least on the IT side and certainly on the cybersecurity side, was this thing that was kind of this unknown, mysterious element out there that I remember people talking about very favorably, but I could never figure out, like, how do you get into consulting? And I just couldn't find the path in there for one reason or another. And so that really drove me, that curiosity about what is it to be a consultant? What does that look like? What does that mean? Drove me to my first consulting opportunity. And then fast forward, you know, it would have been about 12 years after that. I had been in consulting for a long stretch at that point. And we were also simultaneously working with a lot of cybersecurity technology companies out there, the company that I worked for. And so I'd always kind of worked alongside of these companies, you know, as you know, a builder of strategies for clients, as a solutions integrator. But I wanted to go see cyber from the side of, you know, the vendor, the manufacturer. So I jumped into that world. Again, curiosity, like, what is it like being on this side of the fence, and what does that look like? So in kind of a longer, you know, description, curiosity is something that has served me well through the years. You heard me earlier reference, like, hey, would you consider having me as an intern? Asking for opportunities has been something that has served me well. If you're not going to advocate for yourself and not, you know, express interest in different, you know, opportunities or areas of you know, study or expertise or whatever it may be, I don't think anyone else will out there for you. So you want to make sure you're asking for those opportunities. And then, and I know this is an old one, but it's still very relevant, networking. And we'll maybe talk a little bit about this as we get into the realities of being in cybersecurity today and trying to land a job in cybersecurity. But networking is important. And especially as you get further down the road in your career, a lot of times it can come down to not necessarily what you know, but who you know and how they can be an advocate and a champion for you in trying to find a new role.
Nick, thank you for that. There's so many pieces to that that I want to take apart. I mean, there are so many nuggets. So I'll start from where you ended. Networking, so key. We talk about it all the time. Chris, there's some people in the chat that I'll start shout them out in a minute, but we talk about that pretty much on almost every podcast. And it's not about, well, it is somewhat about what you know, but definitely about who you know, right? And especially as you get further along in your career. So, you know, that component, the curiosity. Every single person that comes on here talks about the level of curiosity that you have to have. And it's so interesting that you brought up the level of curiosity that you had, not only in the actual like security itself, but what would it be like being on this side? And what would it be like being, you know, like in these other arenas? So that's so interesting to me as well. And that's how you've gotten to where you've been in your career, because you're on, you know, the vendor side, you were on the consulting side. So you're like, oh, what would it be like on the other side of this? You know, I'm the consultant. What would it be like if I was internal? What would it be like if I was a vendor? So, you know, really kind of spanning all the gamuts of different areas of security is pretty cool. I am hearing feedback. Are you hearing feedback?
No feedback on my end.
Okay. So that's cool. So I always like to shout some people out while we get it started. Megan is here and she is listening from St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Megan, thank you for being here. Coco from Hagerstown, Maryland. I don't know who this person is. That's from Dallas. But we always have a cool group that come and show up and ask questions. So folks, ask your questions. Nick is here to talk about an awesome topic. So Chris says, I'm exactly the same. I didn't want to be a developer or a DBA or the math physics aspect of computer science degrees. I love helping the business better enable their use of technology in a safe manner. So Chris knows that my degree is in information technology, and I was the same exact way. I don't know how I scratched out a C programming back in, so I'm dating myself. So Nick, you and I are right around that same, we in that same spot. So I scratched out of C programming and said, yeah, this is not for me. Ended up in the PM space. Nick, for those who love strategic use of technology in a safe manner outside of the big four and other consultancies, what recommendations do you have?
So what has been interesting about the explosion in cybersecurity over the last couple decades and change is the ecosystem that has grown up around that as well. So As I think about kind of the major buckets of opportunity to have careers within cyber, I usually come up with three, maybe four, depending on the day of the week, buckets to kind of wrap your mind around. And that is, first and foremost, sorry, I had a box pop up in front of me here. So you've got certainly the enterprise side of things and, you know, a lot of growth there. And there continues to be good growth there. So going and solving cyber problems for, for organizations of all shapes and sizes, that's a big bucket, right? And that's where I would say, you know, a lot of folks kind of gravitate towards, because there are aspects to kind of the other side of the proverbial desk, that maybe people aren't, as accustomed to or as interested in. So, beyond that, you start getting into the ecosystem. You've got your service providers. I'll generically say that consultancies, service providers. These are companies like the company that I work for, Protivity. We're a consulting company. We help to build strategies. We help to build roadmaps. We help with remediation actions. We're an integrator. And there's a variety of companies of all shapes and sizes, which is probably the most important thing there, because I know a lot of folks will say like, oh, it's the big four. And, you know, some people either really like working for those types of companies, others maybe don't for cultural reasons or what have you. There's so many different types of service provider organizations that you can lean into. Whether it's something really, really big and global like the big four, whether it's something that is a little bit smaller but still has a global presence like Protivity, or getting even into the more specialized kind of boutique areas, depending on kind of what interests you and what your skill sets are. So, you know, that's another bucket to look into. And I mean, the number of service providers that are out there are, I mean, it's too many to even bring up, but there's a lot of good resources out, you know, on the internet that are available that kind of speak to who these companies are. And, you know, certainly LinkedIn is a great place to go as well and start just kind of learning about what those options are. Then the third element is the technology providers. And what you'll start to see is, especially with like kind of service providers or, you know, kind of services consulting companies, and then the technology companies, there's kind of this overlap that will exist between the two of them where they're kind of playing in the same field, but they're kind of the same areas, but they're not. But I put the technology providers separate because for those that are interested in cyber and kind of solving cyber problems or bringing like technology solutions to the table to help solve cyber problems, there are some opportunities to do things and apply skill sets within those companies that are not as, maybe as readily available as some of the other companies, you know, either the enterprise side or on the consulting services side that are available out there.
Okay, got it. So definitely tons of options when it comes to which different angle to take potentially to get in. Edgar says here, good points. Also joining local cyber associations such as ISACA. So when you made the point about networking and asking for opportunities. And I think that point of asking, the one that you in the initial kind of how you got to where you are, asking for opportunities and asking the organization, would you be open to an intern? Do you have interns? You know, I don't know if people do that as much. Like, you know, to say, well, do you have one? Do you have an internship program? They may say no. Are you open to an intern? You know, can I come in and shadow you? Can I? That type of thing, I think, is so important. And it just shows the level of interest. It shows that you're a go-getter, you know, especially when you're earlier on in your career, like that you want to come and learn and see what's happening. And I think that's such a great point that you made that we don't often hear as much. It's like asking for an internship is one thing, but saying, well, if they say no, well, would you be open to, you know, that follow-up, I think is really a good point.
I agree with that. And to Edgar's point, it's a great, great call out. The community that has established itself and is available to folks out there at all levels is, you know, extraordinary compared to what, you know, maybe I was dealing with when I was first trying to kind of find my way into cybersecurity. So, you know, whether it's, you know, an ISC Square group, an ISACA group, ISSA, you know, whatever it is, every community's got, it has kind of its own set of, you know, kind of localized community groups that might be attached to national brands or might be something a little bit more specific in nature. I know, for example, when I first moved to St. Louis, there was, I think it was STL Cyber or something along those lines. It was like one of the community groups that was not really attached, didn't have like an affiliation to any one professional group or another, but was a group of people who were kind of like-minded, had kind of grown up in the, you know, in the industry together, if you will, and, you know, just enjoyed getting together and kind of talking about what they were working on. And again, the online presence of these different communities is there to be taken advantage of, meaning like they want to, you know, grow their ranks. They want to bring more people in. They want more involvement. And again, whether you are someone who's, you know, going through school, fresh out of school, at any level for that matter, and are trying to just find your way in, or someone, you know, who's an executive that's been doing this for decades that commands, you know, a multi-million dollar budget, everyone needs to have their networking groups in order to, you know, to really continue to kind of push themselves in advance and just kind of keep, you know, keep a finger on the pulse of what's going on within cybersecurity.
Yeah, so very true. Chris has up here, Skill Bridges is another great option for transitioning veterans, which we support. And I know that Chris also says the B-Sides, another great localized community to join for networking, learning, presenting, or recruiting local talent. So true. Chris and I have both participated in those. And then Layton, he says, Transmosis is a nationally recognized cybersecurity workforce developer that enables students to develop careers in the rapidly growing information security industry. Transmosis partners with state and federal government employers, educational institutions to deliver an ongoing source of highly skilled cybersecurity talent with a focus on the unemployed, underserved minorities, women, youth, students, and veterans. And they provide a rare opportunity to gain on the job training. That's fantastic. I didn't even hear. I hadn't known about that one, Layton. Okay, cool. So, and Layton says, ask Layton regarding the on-the-job cyber training. Layton is my buddy. He is a friend of mine, a friend to the show. We recruit together and do all kinds of cool stuff together. So I don't mind giving him the shameless plug. So, Nick, let's jump into our hot topic. So, well, before that, you made me aware of the Gartner hype cycle. And I went right down a rabbit hole with that. I love that hype cycle. So I was researching. I'm on Gartner. I'm doing all kinds of stuff because I was looking at it from the cyber side. I was looking from the talent side, HR, talent management, all these various things. So anyway, you put me onto that. I would love for you to share with us what it is and where the cyber fit into that life cycle today.
Yeah, so this is something that I learned about several years ago, but for those that aren't familiar with it, it's something that Gartner came up with to essentially graphically represent the adoption and maturity of emerging technology trends. There's five phases to it. There's kind of what they call their technology trigger phase or something along those lines, and that's really kind of like a, you know, some type of a breakthrough or a theory that someone has kind of put together, or maybe it's just a topic that has a tremendous amount of media exposure, and that becomes kind of the trigger point. And so you kind of get this steep curve in growth that peaks out at what they call the peak of inflated expectations, which is something I love. You know, you take one of the more recent examples of this is the concept of zero trust. And you think about where zero trust was, you know, a half a decade ago or whatever, and it was, I mean, it was shooting through the roof. But if you were to sit down with people and talk about zero trust, you'd get, you know, 100 different takes on this is what it is and this is the value that it provides and so on and so forth. So, you know, peak of inflated expectations, which is then followed by the trough of disillusionment. And with that, you know, it's kind of like this fall to reality. So everyone has big expectations around whatever this topic is. And then we realize that, well, maybe this isn't all that it's cracked up to be, or we've got to really kind of give this a little bit more time to bake itself out and formalize itself. And then from there, you kind of go into this, what they call the slope of enlightenment, where we start to kind of re-expand, re-entrench on some of these topics. And then the plateau, the long plateau of productivity, which is like, okay, we've kind of figured this out now. We know how it applies, how it drives value, how to implement it, operationalize it, whatever. And we're kind of off and running until, you know, the technology or the notion or the theory or whatever is no longer relevant. And for the rest of the group here, I brought this up when Renee and I were first kind of talking about, you know, what we wanted to focus on for this discussion, because there are aspects to that I feel maybe not apples to apples across the board, but kind of follow some of the aspects of what, you know, what the cybersecurity career path really looks like. And you know, there are, I think for the last, again, couple of decades, we've kind of been experiencing this, this, you know, kind of getting up to this peak of inflated expectations on some fronts where, and it's not expectations from like the value of what cybersecurity brings to the table, but it's more expectations of what job seekers have in terms of expectations, as well as those that are hiring folks, and trying to make sure that we're on the same page with those expectations. And I feel like over the last you know, couple of years, we've started to see a little bit of a dip in that, and not a dip that I think is going to be permanent in any way, but just kind of like there's this notion of what, you know, maybe security executives are looking for, how recruiting teams are representing that, you know, the skill sets or the experiences that organizations need, and then what job seekers actually bring to the table, and how do we make sure people are all kind of speaking the same language and all the dots are being connected appropriately so that the right people can find the right jobs at the right time, that type of thing, and continue to advance down their career paths. So I think we're steadily, though, working towards that, you know, plateau of productivity, where we've seen, you know, tremendous job growth, opportunity growth, salary growth, or, you know, compensation growth that comes with cybersecurity. It feels like there have been more stories as of late that kind of fly in the face of what we know cybersecurity to be, or what we thought cybersecurity was as a career path. And so I think this is kind of that, you know, that trough of disillusionment, that, you know, hopefully working towards that slope of enlightenment, to where we're going to finally land in a place where we have a good operating rhythm. And one of the things that that Renee and I talked about was this notion of like being an accountant. And you know, when you look at taking, you know, accounting as a career path, you kind of know from the beginning what that's going to look like, what that might all entail. And, you know, for some people, they may say like, this is super interesting to me. I love the structure. I love the numbers. I love, you know, how do you bring creativity into something that's so structured like that? Like that in and of itself is a challenge. But for other people, they're like, that's boring. Like, I don't want to know what's at the end of the rainbow before I start the journey down the rainbow. And I think cyber has been that I like not knowing what I'm heading towards all the time, but there's a lot of challenge and excitement and certainly good, you know, earnings potential and what have you that has come with cybersecurity, but it's starting to fall into more of a normalized operating rhythm where, you know, you can kind of start to see at the beginning of the career path, what that trajectory might look like and what that end of the career path may look like. And that's okay. It's okay that we're able to kind of look down the path and kind of look down that plateau of productivity and get into some normalized motions with regards to career growth. Now, for those that grew up, again, over the last couple of decades, seeing big jumps in compensation and job titles and all kinds of movement, some of that really starts to normalize, which may drive some people out of the industry because maybe it's not as interesting to them. But I think for a large group of people that are looking still for something that, is a very kind of worthy cause and mission on a lot of fronts, comes with good pay and can have a little bit more consistency and kind of quality of life, kind of that work-life balance, I think that's going to open up a large group of job seekers to cybersecurity as we move forward.
Nick, excellent points. Chris says, great points on a hype cycle. I loved our conversation so much because we hear and we see these articles in the media with, the never-ending jobs. And I posted an article that I saw that I think said that the salaries were $700,000, something like that, something that was so wacky. And I put it out there on my feed and I was like, hey, peeps, is this what you're seeing? And everyone's laughing. Because it's like, it's a joke, you know, like, yeah, a few handful, I guess, you know, either West Coast or just, you know, all the way at the top, certain companies, yes, but overall, that's not realistic. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people have been sold. And when you talk about that hype cycle, like, you know, the education companies, all the boot camps, all these places are like pumping this whole, hey, you could do this thing in 8 weeks or 12 weeks or whatever and get this great salary and all of this. And then you have this abundance, especially of early career talent that are out there struggling to break into the industry. And we see it on the other side, because I know you probably get as many hits as I do with people wanting to, you know, looking for jobs, looking for opportunities, trying to break in. And you get that kind of struggle out there. And then, like you said, the expectation, because they've been sold, you know, something that is unrealistic in the marketplace right now, that's not happening. So, like I said, that sent me down such a rabbit hole with that hype cycle. There are a couple comments here that I definitely want to read. Let's see. Chris said initially, Paul Cummings, Liam McLean, and Alex Rose provide some amazing resources for veterans and others over at Whole Cyber Human Initiative. Yes, it's a very, very, very worthy organization that we support a lot. Trey is here. Hey, Trey, good morning. He says, I'm in St. Louis as well. As someone who is kind of new to cyber, I'm looking to add to my toolbox of knowledge. Do you think cloud computing will maintain its relevance, or do you foresee AI overtaking its importance in the future? Additionally, how are cybersecurity experts addressing the potential vulnerabilities that arise from AI advancements?
At the risk of like completely like just pivoting off the topic, that's a big question. I'll try and answer it in a constructive yet not overly complex manner. So yeah, I think cloud's going to remain relevant. The way that I kind of think about cloud is, I feel like for years we've been waiting for kind of the notions around, you know, network architecture, network engineering. It's really kind of the birthplace of cybersecurity on a lot of fronts, was firewalls and, you know, defending, you know, is everything on the internet's bad, everything behind the firewalls, you know, needs to be protected is good. We've been waiting for that notion of networking or the network aspect of cyber to kind of die down for a while. And it's still there. It's still extremely relevant. I mean, you look at, you know, arguably the most valuable pure play cybersecurity company in the world is, you know, Palo Alto Networks, one of the biggest, you know, network security companies once upon a time that has expanded into other areas. I think cloud is going to be kind of the next iteration of what network security was to the first 30 years of cybersecurity, if not more. So yes, I think cloud computing is relevant. I think there continues to be a lack of skill sets in the market there. I also think this is one of those places where you have a lot of organizations that are asking for help with cloud, and either the way that they're going about asking for help is not connecting with the audience in a meaningful way, or, you know, with job seekers in a meaningful way, or, you know, they're out, you know, with the unicorn job posting that we like to, you know, refer to as, which is, you know, they're looking for everything under the sun, and they're trying to get that, you know, all that experience and expertise on a pretty trim budget. But I do think cloud will remain very, you know, extremely relevant, because that's going to become kind of our new infrastructure, our new plumbing on a lot of fronts for data, for transmission, for storage, things like that. And so, yes, cloud, I think, is going to remain relevant with a nod to AI. I mean, yes, AI is here. It's going to continue to expand. What it is in cyberland, I think, is a couple of things. One, it's going to be a tool set that we're leveraging to help in our day to day. And then secondly, it's also going to be a tool set that we're trying to reduce the risk around and help organizations kind of protect themselves from. So there's how are we using it? There's how is our organization using it? And then there's kind of how are adversaries using it against us? Again, kind of three semi-overlapping perspectives there on AI. But I think what's interesting about cloud right now, kind of maybe more of a nod back to my accounting comment, is I think you can get your arms, as someone who's looking at what do I go do to put myself in a position to succeed now with cybersecurity specifically, to come in and say, I've got some good hardcore cloud skills, I feel, give you a little bit of a lead compared to coming in and saying, I know all about AI, because a lot of organizations are still trying to figure out what is AI to us? What do we do with it? They're not at a place yet where they, you know, can understand how they want to apply it across those three buckets, or be thinking about it across those three buckets, much less are out hiring lots of different people who can kind of play in those different, you know, or defend against those different buckets on some various fronts. But if you were to start looking at AI, I know one topic that we're hearing a lot about at Protiviti is the governance aspect. And that's enterprise teams they know that AI is out there in their environment. They're either developing it or they're using it, you know, via third parties, and they can't stop it. It's almost like AI's gotten to a place where it's like irresponsible for a senior leadership team to stand up and say, we're not going to do anything AI because we don't understand it. So you're not going to see that. You know, investors are not thinking in that capacity. They see this as an opportunity. I mean, this is quite honestly kind of like the next kind of iteration of, you know, kind of industry. We're stepping out of, you know, computing being that kind of that last major step, or the internet being that last major technological advancement, into what is going to be AI. But I do think that the skill sets around cloud will get you a little bit. There's more opportunities out there right now, is probably the way to say it.
Cool. Very, very cool. Let's see. So Chris wants to know, what are your recommendations for companies to create standardized job roles and job training requirements so that the cyber talent workforce can move around in cyber-like resources in a CI/CD development pipeline for talent?
So a couple of things, and this is an extremely complicated breakdown, or it can be. One, you know, and this starts with kind of leadership and strategy around the program. In my mind, you have to know ultimately what it is you need to do really, really well. What are those things that you're going to insource? I'm going to go actually hire full-time employees to do this thing or launch this program or, you know, manage this particular part of the operations, versus what you might outsource. Because what we've seen in various scenarios over the years is companies feel like they've got to go and be really good at everything. And what happens when they take that approach, especially on the hiring front, is they basically put themselves in a position where they're good at like a couple of things. They're not even sure if it's the right things. And they're average or worse yet, below average at things that they probably shouldn't be at that level at. And so you got to be thoughtful about, you know, what you need to be really good at. What is your program there to, you know, to protect and enable at the end of the day? So really start with that as kind of, you know, one of your first principles, because then that's going to spell out, well, if I need to be really good at these things, whether it's core technology systems, core aspects of the business, or elements of risk management around the combination of those two things, now I can go and say, okay, well, hey, we've got, you know, back to the cloud example, we're in the process of moving all of our workloads into cloud-enabled environments, you know, Azure, GCP, whatever. That's going to be our infrastructure of the future. Okay, well, we're going to want skill sets around that. That's pretty mission critical to what we're doing. So yeah, cloud and cloud skill sets are going to be kind of a core element of my security program. So I need skill sets there. So you would carve out your job descriptions around that. You know, identity and access management is another common one that we see, because everyone, you know, ultimately we're trying to securely enable people to access, you know, customers as well as employees, access to data, to applications, to, you know, to do their jobs, to get value out of the services that they're trying to you know, that they procure from an organization. So I think identity is going to continue to be, you know, a big area, and that requires a specific type of skill set. So again, I go back to like these job postings where it's like, we need an engineer, and it's got like everything under the engineering umbrella, or we need, you know, an identity person, and they want that identity person to have expertise in all of these different areas, which just doesn't exist out there in a meaningful manner. Or I need deep expertise across all the major cloud computing platforms. You got to be purposeful and thoughtful about how you're putting the job descriptions together. So that's number one. Number two, for those that aren't familiar with NIST, has got a framework they call their NICE framework. Go check that out. There, it's a tremendous resource. That, I mean, it's got a lot of detail. Don't get me wrong. Be ready once you start kind of dipping your toe in the pool. It's a deep pool, but there's a lot of useful information in there that you can use to kind of put together job descriptions. Think about job roles. Think about your operating model as a security program and as a security leadership team. So I, you know, use those resources that are out there. And then the final element that I would add to this is, you know, think about the feedback that you're getting from your job search. If you are constantly running into, I can't find the right people, chances are it's how these job roles are being written, or how maybe you've even got your cybersecurity team organized. Is there a way to kind of take the program and put it on its side and say, maybe I can think differently about how our operational processes work, and how do I take something where if I'm, like, we talk about like in development, like full stack engineer, right? Like someone that can do everything from front end to back end. Like, those are really hard resources to find. But if you start to chop that up into bite-sized pieces, you can say, okay, I need a skill set that's based in this. I need a skill set that's based in this. I need a skill set that's based in this. And now I can take, you know, three ingredients and put together the same recipe that I would get with that one unicorn that I'm looking for. So this is an area, and what's challenging about this area is a couple of things. One, as cybersecurity leaders, they talk a lot about talent retention, but I don't feel there's enough focus being given on you know, how to go and meaningfully find the next, you know, talented individuals that they need. It's like the people aspect of the equation when looking for new folks almost comes last. It's like, we need to go buy this technology. We need to stand up this program. We need to get budget. Oh yeah, we need someone to run this from a people perspective. So I think there's opportunities for cybersecurity leaders to continue to adapt and morph how they are going about their hiring process and their training process and what career pathing looks like in their organization, rather than everyone going and throwing their fishing line into the same pond looking for the same giant fish that really doesn't exist out there in any meaningful or, more importantly, affordable manner, and just kind of start working to get out of your own way rather than running into that same wall over and over again, because that's what we see. Oh, I've had this role open for 9 months. I can't find, well, there's a reason for that. Let's evaluate that reason and try to come at it from a different perspective, from a different route than just leaving the role out there unfilled.
You are speaking, preaching to the choir right now. Woo, child. Woo. Chris says attraction, growth, and retention is often overlooked. I mean, we can have a whole podcast focused on just that sliver. You know, I've been preaching that for years and years and years, and been doing this since 2011. So 13 years now of talking about this very thing. But the job descriptions, as people, you know, it's funny. I had some leaders on, and we talked about some job descriptions that they had, and they were like, "Oh, we put everything on there so that when somebody, whatever skill they have, they could fit." Like, that's not the way people look at job descriptions. If they feel like they have this laundry list of things, it either makes them nervous and say, "Do these?" Leaders really want me to have all this stuff, or I'm not qualified because I don't have all this stuff. You know, you self-select out when you see a crazy looking job description, but in their eyes, oh, we just put everything in there. Oh, we want all the ingredients. So if I'm one of those ingredients, then I'm going to apply. Where it doesn't work like that.
Yeah. But one thing I'll add, Renee, is I've over the last couple of years, I've had more discussions with security executives about what they call their operating model than I have at any point in time in the past. And I feel a lot of those discussions are rooted in some of their challenges with finding the right skill sets and the timing around, you know, when to bring these people in, how to train and develop people. CISOs have and security executives have a lot on their plates. I think everyone probably that's listening to this stream understands that. But I do feel that there are more kind of thoughtful, investigative approaches to how do I solve this problem versus just continue to, you know, acknowledge that, well, I'm never going to find the people that I need, and therefore I'm going to just continue to invest in more technology that isn't going to get properly implemented, that I'm not going to get all the value from that I originally bought it for. And so I think slowly this is starting to evolve. It just, one of the challenges is it, you know, it's starting to evolve at a time when, you know, our economy and a lot of geopolitical things are not in a great place that you know leads to the job abundancy that we saw you know 3 or 4 years ago. So patience is required, but right. I do feel that people are, and organizations and security leaders are trying to be a little bit more thoughtful about this on some fronts.
Yeah, and I'm glad to hear that because I had seen, and I've heard something like kind of to your point about the varying models, like what do we do best? What is my operation model? What is my talent pipeline going to look like? What is it, you know, where do I outsource? What makes sense? Where can we retain talent? All of those kind of pieces to the puzzle, and looking more strategically at you know, the program as a whole, I think, is definitely something that I've been seeing more and more of, which is fantastic. Because yes, you can't sit with a role for 9 months. I've been in those, sitting in those organizations when I was internal into an, in an organization where a role would sit, oh, this person, you know, and you're trying to find the talent and it's just not out there because this is what, you know, you can't find this unicorn, to your point. So it's good to hear that that's where we are today. More comments are coming in. Oh boy. Let's see. Chris says attraction, growth, and retention is often overlooked. Resource mobility is often undervalued. Diversity is lost in a long list of requirements. Going back here, Edgar made a comment about cloud concentration is best now and AI is a good to know cherry on top skill set, which is cool. I know that Leighton talked about getting on the job training, that you must get on the job training. That's very, very true. So Nick, we have only a couple minutes left and I wanted to ask this one final question, because when we were chatting and we talked about the fact that, where we are today, in terms of security. And one of the things that you talked about, which I thought was pretty cool, was if a person is struggling to break in, and you know, we're looking at the jobs and we're looking at the skill sets and we're looking to see what's out there, and you may as an individual be kind of, and I'm hearing this more and more, you know, I've been looking for 9 months, I've been looking for opportunities, there's not many out there, people are getting, you know, there's a lot of transition happening right now, layoffs, all these various things. And you said to me, the hot skill sets could be older skill, you know, things that are in the market that are, that have been around for a long time that sometimes you can't find because everyone's chasing the new thing. And there could be very well good opportunity with some of the skill sets or some of the technologies that have been around for a while. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, and my point in saying that is, you know, you've got to, when I think about a job, when I think about a job hunt, you know, the way I describe it is it's all about your top of funnel. The more opportunities, the better. You know, if you zero in on one opportunity that is like this perfect, great opportunity, that's great that you found that. But, you know, you set yourself up for kind of a single point of failure, and then you got to kind of start over. So when it comes to looking at opportunities, you know, don't put yourself in a corner, essentially. And there are going to be some aspects, like I used to tell people this a while ago, and there are some aspects that are still true to this, but like, you know, how do I get in cybersecurity? I used to tell people, I'm like, learn the mainframe. And people would look at me like, what are you talking about? Learn the mainframe. Like mainframes, and this is, you know, a decade ago, I'm like, mainframes are still here. They're still powering a lot of things from an IT operations perspective, but the skill sets attached to those systems are becoming extremely scarce. So there's a shortage there, not because, you know, there's not ample opportunity, but because there's a lack of interest. And so know that, like, you don't have to land in your perfect role in order to start your career. I think there's like this aspect now that unless I find the exact thing I'm looking for, I'm not going to take it. This notion of kind of getting in and kind of learning and developing and kind of moving around, you know, laterally as well as vertically, or horizontally as well as vertically. These are important aspects that still exist today. So, you know, there might be older aspects of technology that you could leverage to kind of get your foot in the door, or to get, you know, go stand in a short line if that's going to be your, you know, your path in. You know, why go stand in a long line that isn't going to guarantee you anything? So cast that wide net. I think it's important. You know, we've talked already about some of the skill sets. Again, I think cloud is important. You know, getting skills in and around the big platform providers, Microsoft, Azure, GCP, and AWS, as well as some of the technology providers that you see out there. Microsoft is a big provider of cloud tech, Zscaler, Netskope, those types of companies. You know, I mentioned identity, you know, some of the companies in that ecosystem, like a CyberArk or a SailPoint. Again, the Microsoft world, I don't have a single security executive that I'm talking to that isn't currently asking what more can I do with Microsoft, because there's a tremendous opportunity there. Microsoft has done a tremendous amount of investment to kind of get their security capabilities up to a place where they're truly enterprise grade in some exciting manners. You know, we talked about some of the plumbing, you know, the architecture and engineering on the data or on the network side. I think data protection is going to continue to be an area. The probably the most important thing beyond thinking broadly about what your opportunities are out there and not pigeonholing yourself. There are one of the areas that I feel like we've kind of failed folks is we kind of put out this you know, help wanted sign, any skill sets apply. And I think that's true on a lot of fronts, but there are only so many roles in and around the non-technical elements of cybersecurity. And I feel like that's where a lot of the more inexperienced people gravitate towards is non-technical roles for various reasons. I also get the sense that there is a disconnect between what organizations see the value of technical skill sets being and what individuals feel the value of those technical skill sets are. And again, you look at some of the economic challenges that you know we're kind of facing right now, or headwinds that we're facing. I think we're starting to see we're in kind of this hangover period from the pandemic, where we saw technical skill sets, the value in those, like go through the roof. And now we're starting to see that slide in the opposite direction. So people need to kind of temper expectations around salary and around compensation, especially if you're trying to get your foot in the door. So not only thinking about the technical skill sets that you can train yourself up on, but ensuring that you remain in an affordable category and you temper those expectations because, you know, going back to the accounting analogy, when accounting was first a thing, I would imagine there weren't as many accounting skill sets at that time. And we're talking a long, long time ago. So I could, as you know, as someone who was an accountant per se, I could demand a much higher level salary, higher level compensation, because it's a supply and demand thing. Now, cyber has kind of worked through, I think, a lot of that, where we had way more need than we had supply. You know, way more demand than we had supply. And we're now getting to a place where some of that's coming into a balance. And, you know, yes, we like to advertise that we've got all of these unopened or these unfilled job posts out there. I'll say something that maybe is a little controversial. Something is off somewhere, because I know way too many people that have outstanding cybersecurity skills, credentials, experience that are having a hard time finding a job. So I don't know. I wouldn't say that we don't have a lot of good opportunity, but when you see like, oh, we've got millions of unfilled roles, I just don't know how much weight that carries. So again, this all comes back to tempering your expectations and what you can do to put yourself in a position to be an attractive candidate. It's not just about the skill sets. It's about how you're valuing those skill sets versus how an employer may be valuing those skill sets. And a lot of times that kind of comes down to compensation. So if you can get your foot in the door and start having some conversations, know that you can climb that ladder and there's time to make up for compensation, but you may not get exactly what you're looking for right out of the gate. All that said, I think cyber continues to be an exceptional career opportunity for folks. It's a challenging area. Once you can get in, there is a fair amount of job security that comes with it. And it is becoming a little bit more white collar in nature, in that, you know, it's kind of reaching that operation, that plateau of productivity, where people can kind of look and see the other end of the rainbow. And for a lot of organizations, or for a lot of job seekers, that is something that can actually bring some ease to the stress of trying to find a job rather than the excitement of not knowing where you're going, because it's all really exciting and we're getting to kind of create and build the plane, you know, after it's already taken off.
Exactly. Nick, there have been a couple comments. It's so funny. Chris was saying before you made the comment, he made this comment. So he says supporting mainframes and agent application platforms that can't be migrated or supported in the cloud, people often overlook learning those skill sets. So he said that right before you said this exact same thing. Edgar, for those having a difficult time looking to IT auditor roles as a starter for a few years, then migrate over to cyber. IT audit roles are in high demand as well. Leverage your IT skill sets. If you can build it, you can audit it, then eventually secure IT, which covers cyber. Such a good point. And our final question before we wrap, Nick, because I know we're over the 1 hour mark. The question is, how does this advice change given the specific and niche skill sets within the space?
I don't know that it changes. Again, some of these basic premises of, and I'm kind of answering this question from the perspective of a job seeker, skills and the value of those skills are looked at differently by different organizations. And so you may not always have access to all of the insight that you need to say, well, how do I know that I'm properly balancing that? So your answer to that may be, again, casting a wider net. Again, people will get kind of plugged in, like, I want to work for this type of company, or I want this exact type of title. Or, I don't want to do any of these other things that are attached to the job title. I just want to carve out this little, I think I'm worth add an extra comma to the, to the salary type of thing. Those are usually the areas where we see challenges and that disconnect between, job seekers and those that are on the hiring end of things. And certainly Renee, you and, your circle would know, more about that or could add more context to that than I could. But, skills are skills. When you say niche, that is something that can exist on two fronts. It can be niche because, again, on the demand side, there's just not a lot of companies that have a need for those skills. Or on the supply side, there's not a lot of people that have those skills. So you've got to understand and recognize what you're kind of looking across the table from. Do I possess a skill set that very few have, but is in abundant need? Or do I possess a skill set that very few people have that very few organizations actually need? So niche can be good, but it's also, productive. I should say it's only productive when you've got the proper context surrounding what those skill sets, kind of the supply and demand around those skill sets.
I would agree 100%. It's totally, I'll add the context in 2 seconds and then we'll jump off. But yes, it's truly what the market is bearing. If you have a skill set that's very, a need in the marketplace and other people don't have it, your rate goes up. It's purely supply and demand. If it's the other way around and it's this really cool skill set, but nobody needs it in the market, then it's niche and it's just not needed. Nobody, who's going to pay for it? So Nick, the questions are still coming in. I have to stop. I knew this was going to happen because I knew this was a hot topic and you were the perfect person to come on and chat about it. Thank you so very much for being here today. This was awesome, very engaging, really flipping this a little bit on its head because I think we, like you said, something weird happening in the market. We're seeing it. The individuals on this side are seeing it. We know there are a lot of people that are actually really skilled, great employees, great candidates that are not getting opportunities. So the question mark is what's happening? And that's the experienced folks. So, when it comes to being brand new, then you really have to kind of take a look at it from a different perspective. So thank you again for this conversation. Security Peeps. We'll be back, I believe, later on this week. But keep the questions coming. Keep the comments coming. You all are awesome. And we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
In the rapidly evolving world of cybersecurity, your business needs a guide that's as dynamic as the threats you face. CPF Coaching LLC delivers unparalleled expertise to elevate your cybersecurity startup or business. With a decade and a half of specialized experience, we're not just advisors, we're your strategic partners in growth and risk mitigation. Our tailored advisory services range from immediate hourly guidance to comprehensive 3 or 6 month packages, all supported with encrypted messaging for real-time assistance. For more information, cpfcoaching.com is your destination. Forge a path to success and distinction in the cybersecurity landscape. Connect with CPF Coaching LLC today and secure your business's future.